are you right now? Are you sitting? Chances are you may be in some sort of chair. We spend about three quarters of our day in a seated position. We're asking, how did chairs get here and how do they inform where we are as a society? It's The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Chairs go way, way back, thousands of years, through classical times to the time of pharaohs. You can trace chair to the Latin word cathedra. Let's bring in Vibar Cregan-Reed, who's been writing about chairs. He is a reader in English and environmental humanities in the School of English at the University of Kent. His most recent book is Primate Change, How the World We Made is Remaking Us. And he wrote a piece in The Conversation called Anthropocene, Why the Chair Should Be the Symbol for Our Sedentary Age. Vibar, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning to you.
Well, first of all, help us out with the word Anthropocene. I understand it's when the human started making an imprint on our world.
That's exactly correct. As to when exactly that was, we're not exactly clearly decided on that yet. But yes, it's the name for it's the proposed name for a new geological era. We were for about the last 11,700 years. In an era called the Holocene. But yeah, it looks like it's about to be declared. Our era is about to be declared the Anthropocene.
So why should chairs be the symbol for this age?
Well, that's so interesting. It's like pointing out water to a fish. They're everywhere. And we don't even see them. They seem very normal to us. They seem very natural. I live in an apartment, a not very big apartment in London. There's only two of us, and you know, a quick count of the chairs in our apartment yielded us a result of 22. So there are billions more chairs than there are people on the planet, and most of our work as a species is now done in a chair. So we've only really started using them very recently.
Very recently, what do you mean by that? Because chairs and what seems to be chairs go way, way back in time, you know, thousands of years ago.
Yeah, thousands of years, probably about 4,000 or 5,000 years ago. They were probably invented around the same time as the wheel. But the thing is that most of the, so our environments, the places where we live and work and rest, our environments, they invite certain kinds of work, certain kinds of labor for the human body. And the environment for many years was one that invited a very active form of work that required us to mostly be on our feet, to mostly be doing physical kinds of labor. But then with the Industrial Revolution about 200 years ago, that there's a proliferation of sedentary work. So in London in the 1840s, there are only about perhaps about 5,000 or 6,000 people doing administrative work. It was about 0.01 of the population. And then in the US today, it's about 85% of the population use a chair to get their work done. So chairs have suddenly spawned like angry bacteria over the planet.
I love it. Vibar Cregan-Reed is with us. He's a reader in English and environmental humanities in the School of English at the University of Kent. We're talking about the origin of chairs and what they say about us today. Your questions are welcome at 800-642-1234. How do you think chairs have changed our lives? How has our more sedentary lifestyle changed the way we live our lives? And do you make an effort to be less sedentary? How do you do that? Call in at 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. Vibar, how did chairs become a status symbol? And are they still a status symbol?
They became, very much so. I think they're still a status symbol. They became a status symbol many years ago. When we began to gather in small settlements, we humans as a species, mostly they all did similar kinds of work. But once we start gathering in things that would now resemble towns or even early cities about 4,000 to 5,000 years ago, you start to get a really big differential between people at the bottom of the pile and people at the top of the pile. So people at the bottom of the pile would have been slaves, usually captured in war, and they would be doing the hardest and most unpleasant physical manual labour. And the people at the top of the pile had leisure time. Their subsistence work was done for them by other people. And so chairs became associated with sedentary leisure. And, you know, most of our lives, most of the things that we do in our lives now, we watch TV, we go to the cinema, we watch plays at the theatre, and we enjoy these things. We enjoy our leisure in a chair. So because chairs were associated with people that didn't have to do manual work, for thousands of years, there weren't very many people that had or needed or even could use a chair if they wanted to. So, for example, the way that status, so it's only very, very important people that had or used chairs for thousands of years. But the way that status still works is in our language, you know, so if you in your office, the boss always has the best chair. The highest attainment in my own profession, which is academia, that's also called a chair. The person that runs a company is a chairperson. So they are still associated with status, but with the mass democratization that took place at the beginning of the 19th century, all of a sudden everybody wanted chairs and they start appearing everywhere in literature, for example.
And even certain types of chairs, what you do in a chair, like a reading chair, for instance, you read in a particular type of chair.
Yeah, well, there was no need to have reading chairs really until the 19th century because so few people could. So these sedentary leisure activities, they only become popular and widespread once machines start to do a great deal of our work for us. And that's the Industrial Revolution.
And when you think about the office as well, people covet their chairs like they covet their staplers. I mean, they take their chairs if they have to move to a different space. And there's something about their own chair, is it not?
Yeah, there is. And I think we believe that our chairs do certain things for us, that we have certain biomechanical issues that will be solved by the right chair or exacerbated by the wrong chair. So, yeah, we become attached to our chairs. They're such an important part of our lives. We spend at least, 60% of our time in them. We spend more time in our chairs than we do sleeping in our beds.
I think the most signature image, for me at least, of a chair in 2018 was watching Mark Zuckerberg, the CEO of Facebook, testify before Congress, and he was sitting in a chair that had a cushion on it because it was a very hard chair there in Congress, and he had a cushion that both elevated him and made the chair less uncomfortable. Yeah. And I still see that image in my head because someone took a picture of that. there's a lot going on in that image, is there not?
There is. There's all sorts of things going on in that image. Comfortable chairs are going to be, they're going to be the death of us, I think. So one of the things, one of the things that I've talked about in my book, Primate Change, is the idea that as chairs become more and more comfortable, as they become more cushioned and more and optimized for human comfort, we inevitably spend more time in them. And what we should really be doing, what we really need in our office, is uncomfortable chairs. Chairs where we can only sit down for about 20 minutes and then we think, oh, I need to get up.
We're talking with Vibar Cregan-Reed, who stays with us, author of Primate Change, How the World We Made is Remaking Us. Your thoughts on chairs, 800-642-1234. Are you aware of the chairs in your life? Do you have a chair for a particular thing you do? 800-642-1234. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kedar Cherkent. There could be more than 60 billion chairs in our world. Vibar Cregan-Reed, our guest, thinks he did some back-of-the-envelope calculation there, thinks it would be hard to go lower than 8 to 10 chairs per person. We're talking about the role of chairs in life and how they've adapted us and we've changed them. Baibar Cregan-Reid takes notes on all of these things as he writes about the chair. He's a reader in English and Environmental Humanities in the School of English at the University of Kent. He wrote about chairs for The Conversation, and you can join in as well, 800-642-1234. How do you think chairs have changed you? Do you work in a desk job? Do you find yourself telling work colleagues, I'm tied to my desk or tied to my chair? Do you see the chair having prestige now like it did in history? Let's talk about it. 800-642-1234. Tweet us at WPR Mornings. Baibar, I'm standing right now. I've ditched my chair, and that's a new thing we can now do in the studio where we can actually stand instead of sit in our studios. So are we seeing more of this as we see how we've learned in recent public health that sitting is bad for us?
Yeah, I mean, sitting is bad for us in lots of ways. And chairs, like so many things in our environment, chairs are changing our bodies. So standing for some, lower back pain, non-specific low back pain, which is the number one cause of global disability, back pain is strongly associated with chair use. So many people are switching to standing desks. But it really depends on what kind of back pain it is that you have. And, you know, just switching to a standing desk could worsen your back pain if that's something that you struggle with already. But it seems that standing desks make us more mentally active. One of the ways that seats or chairs are changing our bodies is that our feet are getting weaker because they spend a lot less time being loaded by our body weight. And if you're at a standing desk, that means that your feet are being used. So it's very good. They have many, many benefits, and I think we're going to see more and more of them. I also wonder whether the treadmill desk is going to become increasingly popular as well.
Have the design of chairs stayed pretty similar through the ages, or has the chair evolved in its design?
The chair has definitely evolved in its design. There's a wonderful, beautiful chair that I have at home called an Aaron chair, designed by Herman Miller. Once you've seen one of these and you know what it is, you'll see them. You see them in movies and all kinds of places. But they've sold, I think they've sold over 7 million of those chairs. So chairs are, and these are very optimized for to be comfortable to a whole range of different people of different body shapes and of different weights. But on the whole, the Klismos chair, which is a Greek chair from about 500 BC, beautiful thing, four legs, a seat and a back. It's not changed all that much. So in some ways, with the Aeron chair, that they've become more optimized, but the chair hasn't changed a great deal. And in fact, an uncomfortable chair from about 3,000 years ago would probably be better for our health than a really, really comfy, sofa that you can sit back in.
Oh, yeah, and it would be an antique and it would be sought after by the highfalutin fashion people, interior designers, to have in some home, right?
It would, and you'd consider it too precious to sit on. That's good as well.
Do you think we're more aware of the challenges or confusion that we're causing for our bodies? Because in some countries, people are not sitting. There might be squatting on floors, or they prefer a cross-legged position on the earth. How do our bodies adapt to all of this?
Okay, so certainly in lots of parts of the world, people are still squatting, and squatting, it seems, is much better for the human body. In fact, it looks like aspects of the human body are specifically designed for squatting. So lots of people in Southeast Asia, for example, would squat. People in India, not the younger generation, but the older generation, might sit cross-legged on a floor. And these all have different effects and different impacts on our body because they load the body weight at different hinges, like the lower back or the fronts of the knees. So it does make a difference. The nice thing about a standing desk is that it makes you more active. I don't know if you've noticed, Kate, but when you use a standing desk, you're much freer to move away from it to go and do something, rather, whereas you're in a chair, there's that little bit of friction that prevents you from getting up. You think, no, I'll do that when I'm up. So I do, yeah, people, different habits throughout the world are having different effects on the body, yes.
And we spend so much of our lives indoors now, which is something that you addressed in another recent essay you wrote for the website, The Conversation, especially when it comes to children and their health. What does research tell us about the effects of that?
Okay, so the research is from my book, Climate Change. But so indoor life really begins about 10 to 20,000 years ago when we start to gather in these early settlements. Excuse me. Once we gather, get a few branches of oak and make them into a simple dome so that we have some shelter while our crops grow. This behavior has now become so complete in modern life that in certain places like, especially in Southeast Asia or in Singapore, because so much of children's time is spent indoors, it means that normal eye development is disrupted because a child's eye needs access to very good quality light so that it knows when to stop growing. And if it continues to grow, it's trying to make a best guess at the optimal shape that its eyeballs should be. And what happens is you get short-sightedness. So there are some genes that are involved in driving short-sightedness, but it's overwhelmingly driven by an indoor environment and habits that are associated with being indoors, like screen time, TV time, and reading. But it's not those activities themselves. It's most likely the fact that these things tend to be done in lower quality light. So you now have a country like Singapore, you have 85% of people that are short-sighted. In South Korea's capital, in Seoul, 96.7% of 19-year-old men are short-sighted. And it's happening in the US, it's also happening in the UK. The younger generations who are driven to school, who spend about 8 or 9 hours in school, then they have after school clubs, then they have tutors, then they have music lessons, then they have homework, and by that time all they want to do is play a little bit of Fortnite or play Unknown Battlegrounds. And in the UK last year, a survey was done by Public Health England, and they found that most children in the UK spend less time outdoors than prison inmates.
Wow. So given your look at how the changes we've made are changing us, what advice would you leave us with today?
You need to introduce friction into your life, because the main thing that technology does is it takes away our opportunities to move. It saves us time, but it takes away our opportunities to move. So in the 1940s, to clean a rug, people would take it into their backyard and they would whack it with a stick for 20 minutes. So the cleaning of a rug would burn about 200 to 300 calories. Now all we do is bend over and activate the switch on the robot vacuum, and that burns about 0.2 calories. So that's a movement drop of about 1,000%. And if you think like all aspects of our lives, actually not all, but many aspects of our lives silently take away these opportunities for movement, and we don't see them. We think it's natural and it's normal. So it's a good idea to try to introduce some friction into your life. Try to do a few more things manually. Walking a bit further is a very big thing. When I was researching my book, I found the research so alarming, I ended up filling my house with houseplants, and I also got rid of my car. I'm nearly 50. I never not had a car. And after all I'd learned about what they do to our bodies, what they do to our lungs, I just thought I couldn't possibly continue. So I've now been for a year and a half without a car, which is quite tricky. But it means I walk about 6 miles, 7 miles a day. And it feels normal to me. It's a part of my working life. It's a normal habit for me. So I would say, try to introduce some friction into your life that will allow you to move a little bit more than you do.
And very quickly, as we wrap up and circling back to the chair, do you see the chair holding a high importance in our society going forward?
I think it will, because it's that I think that symbol will continue. But I think that in 10, 20 or 30 years time, we aren't going to see 60 billion chairs on the planet.
Well, Vibar, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Vibar Cregan-Reed is a reader in English and Environmental Humanities in the School of English at the University of Kent. His most recent book is Primate Change: How the World We Made is Remaking Us. Coming up this year brought forth a slew of new, critically acclaimed, noteworthy TV shows. Before we anticipate what 2019 will offer, we look at the most innovative and creative shows of 2018. What do you think was the biggest TV show of the year? What did you binge on? Go ahead, tell us, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.